What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and today I wanted to really talk about the guys who have broken out and the ones who have done the opposite. They've become broken, and who better to bring on to talk about it than my good old colleague, Gino Saris. Gino, it's great to see you.
Good to see you, too.
And first question that I'm going to ask moving forward every single time, who is the pitcher that you just cannot stop thinking about since we last spoke?
Troy Melton.
Yeah, he's so good. Yeah, he's so good.
Just watched him dissect the Orioles. They did something that no team had done since 1933, which is score multiple runs in every inning and not allow a run.
Oh my gosh, is that right? Yeah. Every inning, every single frame, they scored a run.
Yeah,
I've been waiting for a team to do that forever. Yeah, I know it sounds ridiculous, but like in my head, I'm like, oh, you were so close.
That's the awesome. Dissection. I mean, the thing that stood out for me, and we talked about this on Rates and Barrels a little bit today, so I won't go into too much detail, was just, you know, our methods of understanding command and like, you know, because if you look at Fangraphs, the prospectors, they gave Melton a 45 present, 50 future command, which is not a great command grade. And then you look at Location Plus, and he has like a 98 Location Plus. And then I watched that game, and I was like, He can do whatever he wants to the ball. Like he's throwing four seamers on the rail, four seamers at the bottom edge. He's throwing cutters high, cutters low. I don't know. It looked like he had full command of a wide and interesting arsenal of power stuff. I mean, he looked near perfect out there. And I know that like any game to game, you know, guys look perfect and they don't. And I think that's part of the answer with when it comes to command. But it was just hard for me to watch that and say, this is not below average command.
Yeah, it's oh man, that really surprises me that we saw that number. For me, I have a very simple rule. Watch a guy pitch and then ask yourself, do you feel that he's battling himself or the batter? Right? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like he's saying, cool, he's setting someone up, he does this, okay, cool, throw this pitch and he throws the right one in the right spot and he gets a strikeout or so. Great. And the next pitch, is he going in the right area? You know this just watching it. And yeah, Troy Melton absolutely is that. There's so many that I've criticized in the past about, like, I don't really think he knows where it's going. It's chaotic, etc. And you'll hear about at least one of those today where I don't feel that. I don't feel like this guy can put the ball where he wants to and execute the thing when he wants to do it. And Troy Melton certainly, yeah, he's exceptional.
I guess the breakout came with the cutter because he had the split finger. And I think he's been sort of slowly replacing the slider with the cutter over time, or at least it's just been featuring the cutter more and more and the slider less and less.
Yes. No, that's really what it was. A pretty much hard swap between the two.
Yeah. And you know, what occurred to me was that he's using the cutter as a slider sometimes and as a cutter other times. It just, you can even look at where he throws the cutter. Sometimes he throws it high and tight to lefties, and sometimes he throws it low and away to righties.
Yep.
And I think just from my eye test, it looked like the low and away ones to righties had slightly more depth, and the high and tight ones had less depth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that shows a fair amount of what you would probably put in the command bucket too, like the ability to manipulate pitches like that.
Absolutely. I mean, so I'm assuming that you're using, you know, my pitcher dashboard for a little bit of this, and you'll see on his pitch movement even yesterday, it's always a gray area between a slider and a cutter. I remember you tweeting that out a long time ago. Like, don't get me started in trying to figure out what's a slider, what's a cutter.
Yeah.
And you'll see like there's one cutter that's just right above the pink of all the sliders, you know, and it's really hard to tell, but you're totally right. Like I'm seeing even yesterday down and away to right-handers with that cutter. I'm seeing up and away even to lefties at times, sometimes coming in the previous starts, he's certainly jamming a little bit more with the cutter. It's become the strike throwing offering that he needs so that he can do more with the four seamer, can do more with the splitter as well.
I guess he does spray the four seam high sometimes. I did see that in the game. A couple of times he just lost one and it went.
Oh, you're saying like too high up and everything, spraying in that way. Yes.
Sort of like wasted a couple four seams, but
sure.
I mean, there's a lot of this stuff is like right on the black.
Also, by the way, guys, that baseball dashboard, it's going to be accessible to everybody with a PL Pro subscription very soon. So if you've been hearing me talk about this with Eno all year, get psyched because there is no better tool in my view than the thing I just made for myself because I needed it. So you'll get access to it soon.
There is a flaw hidden in here though, which might just be that maybe he doesn't have a great feel for spins. That's why the cutter has been better than the slider. Mm-hmm. And so I do wonder if he'll ever be, you know, a 28, 29, 30% strikeout rate. Like, is he really a top 15 guy? I think he might settle in with like a 23, 24% strikeout rate, something around league average, which would make him more of a top 30 guy, I think, perennially. Sure. So I don't want to say that that's obviously what he's going to be, because maybe he develops more feel for the splitter over time. Maybe he adjusts that and starts throwing it even more. It is a pretty nice pitch. I mean, it's a hard splitter. It's 89, 90 with good movement. So, you know, maybe he develops the splitter over time and becomes, you know, a proto Gossman or something like that.
You know, the guy I can't stop thinking about, and I kind of want to talk about AJ Smith-Shawver going today, actually right now, 4.1 innings with, I think it was like two whiffs or something, despite throwing 97 on his four-seamer. And I'm just like, okay, you threw hard, empty velocity a bit, even though it's 16, 14 as far as movement goes, like a 43-degree arming. But there really isn't enough in like the splitter and no other secondaries. The real guy, you're going to be shocked when I say this name, okay? It's a Rocky, you know. I know. Look at his eyes. Oh, my gosh. Gabriel Hughes. I am so curious. Because here's the thing. What you're asking me before, what is a slider? What is a cutter? I ask you, what is a cutter and what is a four-seamer? Because everything has it labeled as Hughes throwing a four-seamer. You could say maybe it's a cut fastball. Fine. But to me, I mean, this is a cutter. This is a pitch that is averaging -2 horizontal at 92, 93 with about 9 inches of vert. And it was so good. I mean, sure, it's probably more like 11 or so or 12 in cores. But if you watch this game against the Nationals last week, I mean, he was locating this and jamming so many lefties with it and getting weak contact. And I'm just watching it being like, they can't hit this thing. Like, they are really struggling against this 92, 93 mile per hour cutter. And then he pairs it with the slider a little bit here and there. He's got a bigger curve. Sure, all that aside, it's really just about a pitch he's throwing about 70% of the time. And I don't know. I think he's going into San Diego. He's going to host the Rays. He's going into Arizona. It's very possible that Gabriel Hughes is worth a stream on the road against the Padres and the Diamondbacks. And I was curious if you were aware of this at all. I mean, it's very easy to just to throw away Rockies pitchers. But come on, I'm not going to deal with this unless your name is Chase DeLander. But he's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, I wonder if his Stuff Plus would be changed if it was relabeled a cutter. Mm. It doesn't normally matter what you're labeled, except among the fastballs it can matter.
Ooh, sure.
So that's interesting to me. It looks like the a little bit like the Milwaukee riding cutter.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It has a little bit less. Actually, probably does not, because it's cores messing with my vert here. So yeah, you're right. Like the Chad Patrick a bit, maybe like the Woodruff, right? I mean, old Corbin Burns, you could say in there too.
I mean, I would normally say, because of the way his arsenal, you know, sets up, that this is a future reliever. Mm-hmm. But in the short term, you know, when you have a pitch that people can't figure out, it's definitely worth at least one time through the league, you know?
Right.
There's a little bit more of a question of, you know, hey, you know, what batters could do is as simple as be like, you know, don't call it a four seamer in your head. You know, he throws a cutter, you know, think of it as a cutter, and maybe that makes it easier to attack him. But, you know, in the meantime, people haven't figured him out. So,
I mean, he was in Los Angeles. He has about 7 feet of extension as well, which certainly helps. And away from cores, it was a 12 vert cutter at zero horizontal movement, like zero.
So give me the specs. Give me the specs away from cores.
Right. So we have a slider at 6 vert and negative 9.
No, the fastball curveball thing, the fastball cutter thing. Give me what's the velo away from cores?
93 for the fastball, 7 feet extension, 12 vert, 0 horizontal, 1.2 height adjusted VAA. 84% strike rate in that game against the Dodgers. And that's what is a quality start, 7 Ks. It's weird. it's not normal. And I think that's what's kind of messing guys up a bit. I think you hit on something there where it's unexpected and the book might be out and in time. I still think about going to, it's still getting the horizontal in cores, right? That still might be effective. This might be the kind of pitcher that would work inside of cores, a guy who can have good extension, which, you know, cores ain't going to affect that one. Decent velocity on a cutter that has horizontal as opposed to playing the vert game, right? So yeah. I'm so curious how this one pans out. I know that some people are actually streaming him against the Padres, and I hope it works because I love weirdness. I love a strange guy figuring something out and taking the league by surprise.
I'm only getting 9 of Gabriel Hughes's pitches when I'm doing this, so I must be doing something a little bit wrong. But, you know, guys that pop throwing something similar. Oh, David Peterson's new four-seam with the Cubs.
No.
And Dustin May's cutter and Brian King's cutter are the pitches that are popping as similar to, and then Sonny Gray, one of Sonny Gray's fastballs is popping as a comparison.
So, okay. So you've mentioned this to me about, hey, look, David Peterson has this new cut four seamer with the Cubs. And I do see it where it is kind of hovering that center line a little bit. It was acting this way a bit before you made it to the Cubs. Even the end of May is where I really start to see him divide that line against Miami.
Yeah, I was being a little pithy. I don't think that necessarily the Cubs did it all, but it did push in further in that direction.
Yes, it has. I mean, it's been emphasized, right? Like it was right at that line. You could say it was too horizontal throughout the season. And then starting on 31, that is May 31st, it's a 1.5. So it's probably like a 3 beforehand. So I understand that one. I think this one is a little different in the sense that it's not from a lefty. It's from a righty. And I think right-handers are a little bit more accustomed to it than I think lefties are. I don't see as many right-handers just go, great, I'm going to have a cutter that goes inside to lefties. I keep yelling about it, but I don't see it enough. And Dustin May's
cutter is looking kind of similar.
Right. So Dustin May, let's be honest here. If you're saying, hey, cool, Dustin May's cutter, which we think is, I mean, I certainly think is like one of the coolest ones ever. That is a great comp. 2.5 horizontal at 94. So that's what Gabriel Hughes has almost. It's just like a tick below. And I don't know, maybe Dustin May.
It's just weird because he doesn't have much else, right?
Right. I mean, he does command it better than Dustin May. Like watching the start against the Nationals, he just did it at will. And they were forced to do something with it and couldn't really do a whole lot. But, you know, that could just be one game with it. It could not be something that he's able to hold on to. But it really does seem like this is what his bread and butter is. And Gabriel Hughes,
he threw it all over. Yeah. High and tight, high and away, low in, low away, and all in the zone mostly. And along the edges.
I can't stop thinking about this guy. I'm curious where he ends up in the next 2 months. What happens? I want to shift it to the real meat and potatoes of this podcast. Every week, I want to make sure we have at least that conversation to start it because I think it's really fun. And we got to talk about breakouts and those who are broken. And you just did your rankings. You know, I sent you a list before this podcast. Yes, I did a rundown. I actually submitted some form of a rundown. Stop gasping, Paul Spohr and Eric Smolski, okay? And Alex Fast, guys. All right. You know what? If you asked really nicely, maybe we would have done it for you too. We have guys that were breakouts this year. I'm questioning if they're real. We have Sean Burke, Gavin Williams, Taj Bradley, Troy Melton, Griffin Jacks, Nick Martinez, Zach Thorne, Cade Cavalli, and Jake Bennett. And then guys who are broken or decliners that might be done, we don't know, are Will Warren, Bryce Miller, Mackenzie Gore, Michael King, Robbie Ray, Framber Valdez, and Freddie Peralta. And why I just said them all right there for you, I'm sure there are others as well to bring up. I want you to talk right now about your rankings that you just put out last week that you're noticing that you really feel strongly about one of these being a breakout or one of them being a decliner. Who would that be? You know,
are you setting me up here? Like yes. Okay.
You're welcome, everybody. I know we try to have the whole curtain and the magic behind the scenes, but sometimes we just tell you.
Well, I'm not looking at my rankings right now, so I could in a second. But without looking at my rankings, I would guess that I had a huge up arrow on Griffin Jacks in this last ranking. Melton went from like 70 to 50 or 49, so that was a big up. And Burke went up a lot after our conversation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So those,
where is he
those,
now?
They're all kind of near each other. They're all back in top 50.
Okay. So just to be clear here and transparent, guys, if you remember last week, we had a conversation at the very end because I was like, guys, I messed up. I should have just done the rankings with him last week with Eno, and I couldn't help myself. I saw that Sean Burke was, I think, very low. Just to let you know, my tier four right now is Sean Burke at 21 and Troy Melton at 22. So I'm very curious of, like, I'm obviously saying these breakouts are real, or at least to the extent that in your 12 teamers, if you have Sean Burke, like, you are not benching him in favor of pitchers like, honestly, Logan Webb at this point, Braxton Ashcraft, Nathan Eovaldi, Parker Messick. Like, I don't see how you can when he has a 30% K rate over the extended amount of time that he is right now. He has a 33% K rate in his last 11 starts with a 2.48 ERA and a 1.04 whip with an improved four-seamer. And I was talking to Jake Crumpler about him, being like, what do you see with the Sean Burke thing? Like, for me, it's still a little weird, but at the same time, like, it's just so good. And he said, well, why don't you consider this like a better version of Ryne Nelson at this point? Because the four-seamer is just that good, and then he has a better secondary cast of sliders and curveballs. And I didn't have a good answer for why I shouldn't do that. That's just to continue on with that one with Sean Burke. I don't know if you have anything left to add there.
But, well, I do. I do have the last 30 K minus BB is something that I looked at. It pushed Cade Cavalli, for example. He had over 30% K minus BB, so he got into the top 40. And all the guys that had standout last 30 top K minus BBs are in my top 50. The only one that didn't make it was Ian Seymour, who at the time had not pitched more than three innings in a row, like in an outing in the last couple of weeks or something.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he went out. Of course, as soon as the rankings went out, he went out and dropped a six inning masterpiece. So
that's how it goes, you know.
Yeah.
You just got to do them every week.
So I do push guys that are on good streaks that are supported by the peripherals. I can do that. Mm-hmm. But the boring answer is that I still use rest of season projections as part of my process. And so I will move slower. I will move slower on some guys. So, like, for example, Hunter Brown before this ranking looked like somebody that, you know, other people were saying he's not even top 50. He's not even top 70. He's toast, all this stuff. And I can see that he had literally a zero K minus BB in the last 30 when I did these
four seamer was looking terrible.
He had lost 2 inches of ride. Everything looked bad, but I can't resist the fact that it's still Hunter Brown on the back of his jersey. He still has these good projections. And I felt a little bit vindicated. He goes out and he threw a gem in his last outing. So, you know, I will move a little bit slower. Like, there's a lot of people saying, you know, even at 26, I have George Kirby too high. You know, there's people saying that at 35, Reed Detmers is too high. At 39, Trey Savage is too high. At 43, Jose Soriano's too high because he really had a standout first month and then has been a little bit more hittable since. And I just say, like, I wouldn't have taken Sean Burke over any of those guys a month ago. And I know he had a great month, and that's why he's in the conversation with those guys now. You know, and I did move Sean Burke, you know, up from 69 to 51 at the beginning of the preseason. He was unranked, and then when he jumped onto the rankings, it was 98.
I was resisting the Sean Burke push for a while myself,
I see that, and he gets pushed up. But, like, for example, Ryan Weathers, you know, has not had great top line results recently, but he himself has an 18% K minus BB, and for the season he's among league leaders in K minus BB, and his projections are like almost a half run better than Sean Burke. So that's where I ended up. You know, I was trying to push them higher and higher and higher, and I could have pushed them into the 40s. Like Christian Scott, I had 41. Maybe now that I think about it, you know, I could push this Melton Robleski Sean Burke group that was like surging. Maybe I could have pushed them ahead of Christian Scott, because Christian Scott was all himself, four innings, five innings.
Yeah, right. No, I actually really lowered Christian Scott in my latest update. Yeah.
Because he hasn't been efficient enough to, given the pitch count they're giving him, he hasn't been efficient enough to go deep. So I could have been 10 off, but you know, I don't think that I would have been as aggressive anyway, pushing Burke into my top 25.
Yeah,
my top 25, I think, is full of really, really good pitchers. I can't imagine putting Sean Burke ahead of Gavin Williams or Braxton Ashcraft, even with his struggles.
Williams, I do have above. Ashcraft, I don't, because I think he's getting a lot worse against lefties with his breaking stuff, and it's kind of something he got away with a little bit before, and now it's normalizing a bit. But I still have him top 30, I think, Braxton. I like challenging you on these just because I think it does highlight like the tough problem that we both have, right? Is I always like to summarize it as guys have done everything up to now, and that does not necessitate that they will do it moving forward.
Yeah, right? And you want to be reactive because guys do break out, but you also don't want to overreact to
stick to my guns or react to the thing. Like either way, it's a lose-lose in some fashion. And it's always very difficult to discern, like, when is this a proper shift and when it isn't. And so I also have the luxury of doing this every week, and I can kind of make those moves a little bit more, and just it keeps kind of going. I certainly get a little bit more convinced that when I see some sort of velocity change or something going on, like Kate Cavalli, I was so out on for ages, but now I'm like, dude, you are throwing a tick harder on your four seamer and two on your curveball, and you have this cutter now, and you are a different pitcher than you were before. While Sean Burke is having, I think it's a 20% swing strike rate on his four seamer in those 11 starts.
But have you seen a difference in pitch movements?
It's an inch extra tick in velocity for Sean Burke, and he's throwing it more upstairs more often. He's also getting more strikes with his secondaries as well. So it's like the secondaries aren't completely disappearing, and he's just in his amazing group with his forcing where nobody can really do a lot of damage against him. I'd like to highlight.
Well, a couple of things are interesting to me about the next two names on the list, Gavin Williams and Taj Bradley, which is that I've been remarkably consistent about my ranking for those guys, even though their numbers have gone up and down. I've ranked Gavin Williams between 42 and 23. I guess he peaked at 19 at some point, but that's not a wide ranking difference.
Where he is peaking for me right now.
Yeah. And it was going into season, he's pretty good, but he's got some risk. And then as he showed that he was breaking out, but then I don't forget the risk. So I'm not going to move him into.
You guys remember the rant I had at the end of last year about the journey of Gavin Williams. Okay. Real short story there is that he started throwing four seamers instead of sinkers. Finally,
he also de-emphasized the cutter that was,
and
then
completely axed the cutter. And that's the last four games. And guess what he's done the last four games? At least 11 strikeouts in each. So
but also like he's lost two of those games and there's been homers, and like it is interesting. The cutter had poor like batting average numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he doesn't actually like bring the cutter back at a smaller rate, you know,
that's what the whole story is, right? It's like this constantly you're seeing the pendulum swing and slowing down, right? Mm-hmm. And he needs to shove it this way, but then he needs to pull it back a little and then eventually settles to where he's supposed to be. Right, he shouldn't axe sinkers to right-handers. He should still have that as a surprise pitch. You're absolutely right. The cutter should still exist in some form as a surprise pitch. But the foundation should always be the four-seamer with Gavin. And with Taj Bradley is someone that I think at this point I have to keep raising on the list because he's on such a good heater. And really the only time he was bad was leading up to injury and then the first start back from injury. And
I've had him between 82 and 54.
Right.
Where he is right
like,
now.
So because like, I was talking about before about the subconscious, you're subconsciously watching a pitcher and seeing if he's executing. And this dude does not execute.
No, he does not.
He has.
But I do have a visual for you. I wonder what you think of this visual. I don't know if you can put it up on the screen right now, but you can look at it. Maybe we can put it up in post.
Sure. Yeah.
But so he was throwing the cutter inside to lefties as is the sort of normal thing that you do, right?
Right, yeah.
But he wasn't executing it. So it was kind of middle to lefties in June. and he got spanked. His strikeout rate was worse, and you know, he was declining usage on the cutter. And then he just reimagined completely what he could do with that pitch. I wonder if it's just sort of, hey, you're missing over the plate. Let's just completely have a different target for you. Let's throw the cutter high and away to lefties and back foot. And let's just eliminate this like middle that you've been doing. He's still, some of them leak middle, but this emphasis on high and away, I think has been better for him.
So you honestly know what I think about this is I think he's just trying to do back foot the entire time.
And he's just missing high sometimes.
I legitimately believe that because I think
honestly, it's on the same axis.
Right, on the same axis. Totally be, yeah. And I think that's just a healthier way for him to do it because he would get burned on that. I would also imagine, like, I think about this all the time of how I used to, when you have breaking balls that miss, right? You're trying to spike it. When you have a miss, it usually isn't actually middle, right? You're coming out too early and it flings out of your hand.
You cast it.
Yeah. And that's where my head goes when I see this graph. When I see
those are the ones he's like sort of slipped out of his hand a little bit. And
right. It's just like, those are the best up ones, but the ones he actually has it stays through, right?
Pretty intriguing conversation with Brandon Sproat about this because Sproat's breaking ball usage has gone dipped below 10% on both of his breaking balls recently, and even his cutter usage is down. And I was like, it's command based. And he resisted what I was saying at first, but he did come around and sort of admit that, like, you know, his curve in particular, it's a big pitch. It's like McLean's curve. It's not really well suited for the strike zone, basically, is what he said. It's not really well suited for strikes, like called strikes, because if he's going to think about putting it in the zone, then he's going to cast it. He's going to put a hump on it. He's going to slow it down. It's not going to be that competitive curveball. It reminds me a little bit of when the Yankees told Sonny Gray to throw his slider in the zone. He's like, well, my slider is just my curveball heavier, like thrown harder. And if I throw it in the zone, that means I'm not getting out in front and I'm not
you're not getting to the extension side.
Yeah. So I'm just casting these breaking balls to the middle of the zone. They're going to suck. You know, and I think Sproat was saying the same thing where he's like, I can't just throw the curveball more in the zone. Like that's not the solution here.
Yeah. That's
so he's kind of gone to the Brewers approach. The Brewers throw the most fastballs in the big leagues, obviously. Yeah. And he's kind of gone to the Brewers approach where he's throwing fastball, sinker, cutter, and he hasn't even thrown his breaking ball more than like his curveball more than like four or five times in a game for like four straight outings.
Yeah. And it's not been a good run for Brandon Sproat.
It's been great because his fastballs aren't maybe as good as some of the other guys. So,
right. I mean, the thing I liked about Brandon Sproat was that he would have variety. He had a cutter that could be there as a stabilizing offering. He was,
I thought I liked his
sinker
balls.
Sweeper, you know, to right.
I liked his big breaking balls. I thought that big curveball was, I thought he was like a McLean was worth with worse command is what I
right.
thought.
And I think this, what I think really about Sproat is that he's a great 2027 at this point. Like, give him the reps this year. Same thing with Bubba Chandler, honestly. Like, these are pitchers
who some shares. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I see it there. Also, you're mentioning with Hunter Brown, and you're like, I just still see Brown on the back of the uniform going to go for him. Like, well, hold on. That could be Ben. And you got to be careful who it is. But with Hunter Brown, it is that forcing with worse ride. As you mentioned, that Tuvert is gone at the moment, and he did get a little bit more of the velocity, and he did throw strikes more with it. It still does not feel like Ben Brown, that guy who broke out last year, and I'm still tepid on it.
Post-injury. Post-injury Ben Brown, Hunter Brown, yeah.
Right. And with Taj Bradley, I guess I got to, like, push him up a little bit, but I can't. I don't know. It's one of those years, like, you know this. There are guys who have these like great years and everyone wants to say, like, well, there you go. There he is. He's great. And then you see in drafts, like, their ADP is still really bad. And it's like, all right, you know what? We were gonna ride him through the year. We're gonna be like,
yeah, nobody really trusts it. Yeah. Like, for example, we put Taj Bradley out on the table in a 20 team, 28 keeper, you know, industry behemoth that I'm in. I haven't really gotten any nibbles.
Oh, interesting. That is interesting.
We tried to trade him and Riley O'Brien for Corbin Burns at one point, and the offer never got responded to.
What do you think Griffin Jacks would get?
He has actually changed hands in this league. I forget what he returned.
Well, what do you think he should return? Because I'm a huge fan of Griffin Jacks right now. We just saw last night, 93 pitches, 5.2 innings, 10 strikeouts. He got whiffs galore. That is all of his pitches. Four of his five pitches had a 20% swinging strike rate, and the other one was a sinker, which was a 72% strike rate. So he's cooking at the moment. And the Rays now pushing him into the sixth, even though he had 83 pitches after five, is really good. I'm a huge fan of this. I mean, Stuff Plus, I know, has to love it. I mean, PLV Stuff Plus adores it, gives him like an A+ every single game.
Yeah.
You must be a big fan of Griffin Jacks.
Yeah, he's been great as a starter. You know, he's been better than he was as a reliever. And I think, you know, and that's supported by the peripherals too. So, you know, as a starter, he's really avoided the home run. He's got a 26% strikeout rate as a starter versus a 23% as a reliever this year. And when I look at what he's done in terms of pitch mix, the thing that stands out for me is that he has gone to this more wide mix. When he was a reliever, there were days where he was 50, 60% sweeper. You know, there were days, you know, where he didn't throw a single curveball. And as a reliever, he didn't throw a single curveball in, you know, like 2/3 of his start of his appearances. As a starter, he's thrown a curveball in every single he's hovering around 10%. Now, that seems weird. Why are you emphasizing this pitch that he's throwing 10% of the time? Well, A, Stuff loves it. And B, it's just representative of how he's hard to figure out right now because now he throws five pitches above 10% of the time and they all
six, couldn't he? I mean, like the cutter he doesn't really even touch anymore. And that was, I actually thought it was like Rasmussen light at first, because it was four seamer cutter were like the same kind of things, and he just actually removed himself from that with the blister stuff. Went with sinkers and sweepers and curveballs galore and changeups. Oh my gosh, that changeup. And now that the blister's okay and he's throwing more four-seamers, he's like, I don't really need the cutter, I guess.
I think the comp here is prime Michael King.
Am I wrong here?
Because I think at his heart, he's a sinker sweeper guy. That's who he is at his core.
Wow.
You know, and the four-seam, even as a starter, has gone in and out. Like he's used it 5% of the time and he's used it 30% of the time. So the four seamer is not his best pitch, but it's good enough.
Man, I mean, so when I remember, I have to look at this a little bit more in detail. I was really surprised when I first saw him as a starting pitcher. I was like, really? Like, this is what's going on? All right, let's take a look. I mean, he only went like 2.1 innings or so in 31 pitches and started to get stretched out a bit more. And that was a long time ago in May. Oh my gosh, it's feel like ages since that happened. Right now, the four seamer is at 19 inches of vert at a 43 degree angle at 95 miles per hour with 1.4 height adjusted VAA. And to me, that's like, so many pitchers would kill for that, right? Mm-hmm. To have that kind of flatness and verts, average arm angle, 18 to 19 vert on that at 95. Like,
well, average arm angle is around 37. So, you know, he's expected to have a little bit more vert.
Sure.
That's why his sinker scores better, is because it's a little bit unexpected given his higher arm angle.
Sure. I guess a
better Clay Holmes is also a possible comp.
Oh, that's a good. I don't have a great one personally.
Yeah.
Because it's a 90 mile per hour changeup also too, and this was actually a tick down yesterday. It's only 91. With that big sweeper, and we will talk about Michael King in just a second, but I'm going to phrase it a little bit differently. By the way, guys. Griffin Jacks is dope. It makes us feel dope. Like, we know this. I won't waste your time with it. What's more interesting, though, I think, are the other decliners, the guys that we don't know if they are going to really recover.
Really quick on Jacks, I think that one of the things that's keeping him back is just workload concerns. And, like, you know, will they put him back to the pen, or what will they do with him? Will they play games with him? What are their plans with him? I already have him at 33, but I could see going into next year top 30. I don't know if he's going to get into the top 20, but that's where I would see him coming into the season.
Yeah, I'm going to be so conflicted because I try not to get excited about these guys who don't really have that seven inning, like expecting six innings every time, essentially.
Yeah.
And I generally overdraft them, I think. But I do want to talk about the guys who are broken and we hope get fixed in the last 2 months of the season. We'll talk about all those and more after this break. So I'm going to phrase it this way. I'm going to throw away Michael King because Michael King is weird to me, but he's not like necessarily terrible for your team. He had a terrible one inning against the Rockies, but still like 16 whiffs. He had 7 Ks and 117 whip, etc. Maybe it was 6 Ks, but I'm going to list the other ones here. And you're going to tell me your favorite one who is most likely to become the guy that we normally associate with their name. That is Will Warren, Bryce Miller, Mackenzie Gore, Robbie Ray, Framber Valdez, and Freddie Peralta. Of those, and I'm not necessarily saying who's the best, I'm more asking who is the one you think is going to return to their normal form.
Might surprise you. Might surprise you. But you did see that I gave you a visual for this guy, Freddie Peralta.
Okay. I hope and so.
The reasoning for this is one, a sort of slightly vibes-based analysis, which is just between 2022 and 2024, he was an extremely streaky second half pitcher. And I don't think that split halves are predictive in that way, but it just points out to me that sometimes things click for him. We've talked a lot about this with him. You talk about how he's crossbody. You know, he's got these complicated mechanics. You know, I think that sometimes things just click in for him. And when they click in for him, he just goes off on a streak. But in order for me to like, you know, be like, why would he have these great second halves? I did remember that I've written like a couple of times over that time frame about Freddie Peralta's slider and how it's gotten better in the second half. And that's why he's been so great. And so I gave you this this visual of Freddie Peralta's slider. And what you can see is between 2022 and 2024, he always added depth to his slider in the second half. And right now his slider has the least depth it's ever had. And he's really like almost turfed it. Like it's an afterthought for him. He's curveball, changeup, fastball right now. And I don't know. Is it injury? Was he like using sticky stuff or like what? Like, I don't know why he's lost the drop on his slider, but if he can get that back and if his new team can get that back and find that little click, he could click back in again. His velo is down a third of a tick off of where it was before. Like he's not that different than what he was before.
Well, right. I mean, I agree with you there of not that different, right?
You just think he wasn't that good before.
Well, no. It's not necessarily what I'm going to say. I mean, he was always Professor Chaos, always a little bit random. But there is this thought that I keep having where there is a collection of these veteran arms like 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, who were excellent and are doing pretty much the same thing, but they aren't high velocity guys. And they're the ones who are having these really rough seasons. And I think of Aaron Nola. I think of Zach Gallen. I think of Framber Valdez. I think of Freddie Peralta. And you can even say Robbie Ray in there too. But Robbie Ray, I think, is way more nuanced than this. Of just like, he doesn't know what's going on.
Like, he's trying his best. He's just trying to stay afloat. Like,
I appreciate him. I literally see the dude inside of the cage, like experimenting with all of the locks and like making like a little string thing together and trying to get the key out of the line, you know, the bars.
I talked to him about the sinker thing. He's like, the top of the zone is dead, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. What am I supposed to do?
He's like, okay, maybe I got my slider. Okay, I do this over here. I do that over here. I don't know. But he's trying. And that's the thing I get so upset about is all these pitchers who are failing and they don't try. They don't like manipulate or really just see what else they can do and tinker and trying to find a solution. And Peralta is in this bucket of just, he's kind of doing all the same stuff, but I'm getting the sense that hitters are just so trained for higher velocity and those quicker adjustments to everything.
This is a great point, dude.
And it's like, the same kind of thing just doesn't work like it used to.
So Freddie Peralta, when he first became a starter in 2022, had a 2023, had a 94.4 fastball. Mm-hmm. That year, the average fastball was 93.6. So he was a tick above average, right?
Right.
This year, he has a 94.3. same as he had in 2023. This year, the average fastball is 94.6. So he's gone with the same fastball velocity as he had when he first broke in as a starter. He is now below average. He went from above average to below average in those 4 years. And that's a great point. I mean, stuff reflects that to some extent. But, you know, we used to talk about there being a shelf. There was some research that came out and said, oh, well, between 90 and 94,
right.
It doesn't matter that much if your fastball velo changes, because that's sort of that's what hitters trained for, 90 to 94. If you're below 90, you know, your home runs start going up. If you're above 94, your home runs per fastball start going down. And then, you know, that was true when the average was around 92. So 92 is right in the middle of that range. I would suggest to you that the new range of average velocity is now centered around 94.
Yeah.
So you, in order to have plus velo, you have to have 96.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, oh gosh, this is why we get so hyped about all of the hard throwers and everything along those lines. Now, I would also ask you if right-handers versus left-handers are different here, because I do feel that a 94-95 from the left side is different than 94-95 from the right side.
There's always a, yeah, it's about a tick lower.
Or so, like, there's a lot of swatches, right? The southpaws with the tight changeup that, like, if I see 93-94 as opposed to 91-92, I'm more excited about that one, right? The
left-handed starters average velo is 93.6. It's a full tick lower. So, and that's been traditionally, it's you have about a tick. So if you're looking at a lefty starter,
then becomes a thing, right?
Yeah, or just if you're looking at a lefty starter, you could just add a tick in your head.
Right, there you go. So I'm getting excited about Parker Messick going from 94 to 95 or even 96. Like,
right. Okay. And Gage Jump, you know, has a plus fastball,
right?
You know, and Jake Bennett, who, you know, looks like he has below average velo, probably has, you know, average-ish velo.
Right. So, yeah. So the whole thing about Freddy Peralta to me is a little like, okay, you're trying to do the same thing, but like, the world is changing around you, as he's just, you know, it's super speed and he's just standing there singing some song for some music video. And and I do think, though, you send him to another place, things could be different. At the same time, like, it's not like the Mets and the Brewers are a bad place, you know?
Yeah, I'm surprised no one's tried to cutter with him. I mean, like, almost ever.
Maybe he's one of those guys that's just like, nah, this is what I do. This is how I do it. So I don't know. I'm very curious where he's going to go at the deadline. Like, he's certainly not helping the Mets at the moment get a good price or make him more attractive. If on paper, it's like, why would I want to trade for that guy? Hmm. You know? And why not just trade for Connelly Early for a guy who's going to get injured in a day?
Yeah. Oof. I would say the case for trading for him is that he's in the bucket of, like, Brady Singer. He's put himself in that bucket, but you would tell yourself, I can pay for him as if he's a rental Brady Singer, and then I hope that I can rekindle, you know, playoff starter Freddy Peralta.
Right. Yeah. Now, looking at the rest of this, we have Mackenzie Gore, Framber Valdez, Bryce Miller, Will Warren. We already talked about Robbie Ray. We're just like, please, man, I feel like that's got that. He's got this. He's getting more into four seamers again. It's just a slider now. But among those, how I see this is Will Warren is going to the pen. I think it's him and not Ryan Weathers. I think we even saw this because he was the follower after Max Fried in the doubleheader. It's kind of like a test to see if this is how it's going to go. He's just not been performing at the same level that we expected essentially for the past year or so. And Ryan Weathers, meanwhile, he's still doing the same exact thing. We were just talking about the KMISBB, but also he just had a great start against the White Sox. It's home run based a lot of the time, a lot of weirdness with sequencing that has messed up some of the other starts. I just think that Ryan Weathers is a better pitcher. Now, are the Yankees going to acquire somebody? Is it going to be fully healthy until Rodon appears, etc.? I don't know, but I would not say it's Will Warren. Bryce Miller seems like the bone spur that he did not get surgery for is finally like, yo, what's up? You forgot about me? Like, I'm here.
Yeah, the velo's down. I think he's fine. I think he's fine. Like, if of all the group, like, I actually maybe the least worried about Bryce Miller, just because that was baked into the price when you got him, you know, like, you always knew.
Sure.
that there was a health risk. You didn't pay a lot for him. He's still out there pitching. You still want to start him every time he's home in Seattle.
Well, that's the thing. He is looking not just worse on the velo side, though. Bryce Miller's, when he first returned this year, was looking not just good with the velocity, but he had feel. Like, his secondaries were doing a ton, and now they're not. And that's actually, I think, the bigger issue than even the velocity. So it's maybe,
I think I have Warren the highest. If we're talking straight ranking, I still have Warren the highest out of this group. I mean, really? Bryce Miller the highest.
No, but then it's Will Warren over Gore, King, Ray, Valdez, Peralta. Maybe not King.
Yeah, I might take that back. I mean, I noticed that, you know, the strikeout rate's down since his great March, April, and he's been basically a league average starter since then. But I just thought he's a league average starter, you know, like
win chance and all that. Right. Do you think that he's going to get moved to the pen? Do you think the Yankees are just going to start him the rest of the way?
I mean, Rodon's back soon. They could even acquire someone.
I think they're going to acquire somebody.
That's interesting because they don't need it, but they're the Yankees. So
they don't have depth outside of Rodon. You know, it's Grande is not healthy.
They could go to a six man, though, because they're trying to keep Cole,
Freed is just coming back from injury, too.
Yeah, so I think they'll go to a six man. I think he'll hang on, but I think he might miss starts. He might do what he did, where you're not sure when he's going to start. The June where he had a 14% strikeout rate and a 10% walk rate was really eye-opening. But, you know, he recovered. In July, he had a 22% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate. That's like dead-on league average.
Sure.
And he had a 381 xFIP that in July. And, like, I don't know. I did see this coming to some extent. I've been calling for regression from Warren, but I thought it would be regression that kept him in the rotation. Now I'm maybe worried that he will lose his job. I hear what you're saying.
So I want to tell you one thing here about Will Warren. Since May 19th, okay, that is a long time. That is, I'm doing quick maths here, 12 starts. He has had one game with more than 9 whiffs. One game, and that was his 7 strikeout, 15 whiff game against the Tigers on July 1st.
That's propped up those July strikeout numbers.
Yeah, right? His last 4 games, he has 11 strikeouts combined. Now, that includes 0.2 innings on the 22nd, which isn't fair. But so I would say 11 starts instead of 12 overall, but it's not encouraging at all to see Will Warren.
I watched him struggle with this. I watched him in his last outing, Warren, and he had bases loaded against a right-handed batter, and he threw some high four seamers that the batter couldn't catch up to. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a game that Joey Votto had, or somebody was doing some really good analysis. I forget who was talking.
Yeah.
And they were like, I wouldn't throw him another sweeper, because you're just doing him a favor because he's not catching up to that high heat.
Right.
And then Warren threw a sweeper and the guy hit a bases clearing double.
Yeah, right.
And two things are interesting about that, which is A, he didn't feel like he had the fastball to put him away. Like, you know, especially this is like a 9 pitch AB or whatever. He didn't feel like he could just, you know, throw the fastball in the zone and throw it by him, which is true. Like, Warren doesn't have that kind of fastball.
Sure.
And then B, the sweeper wasn't good enough to finish him off.
Yeah. So two quick things. One, I apologize, everyone. He closed out that doubleheader game and it was really like a bullpen day. So 16 pitches or so, not really like a relief thing.
An appearance
that happens all the time. Don't think too much about that one. But
it was sort of a skip start, right? Like,
it was a bit for him, and they like had him involved there. So there is something to be said about it, but it wasn't like he went 55 pitches as their long reliever or something like that. But what I do really want to mention is I don't trust that Will Warren was calling that. I don't think that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when we talk about sequencing and pitch selection, everything, we always attribute it to the pitcher, just kind of like the win loss of a team is attributed to the manager. But it's not Will Warren. It's either Austin Wells or it's whatever the team is deciding for their sequencing before the game, and they have it written down. This is what they're going to do. And I have noticed with the Yankees, I mean, I did a whole video with it with Ryan Weathers. I do not like their sequencing. I really don't. I think there's so many times the batters are giving information and they are ignoring it and favoring whatever they have. Cool, 2-strike count, we do this. 4-seamer, we do that there, whatever it is. And that is a perfect example of just ignoring it. Will Warren's just probably falling to whatever the catcher was giving him. And I do wonder, the Yankees are in the market for a catcher. I wonder if whoever comes in.
Yeah, but no new catcher is going to come in and be like, oh, I'm
not necessarily right away. You're right. But I mean, it's not about the whole plan. They are the ones that
they feel confident diverting from the plan.
One or two, they can see that whiff before, but like, yeah, I'm going to do that again.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe.
It could, it's just a few pitches every game that define our ERA. I'm not even kidding. It's hilarious.
I know, but I don't think you're talking like Ryan Jeffers, Liam Hicks,
Ivan Herrera. We've seen. I don't know who they are. It's very
none of those guys are thought of as defensive stalwarts. You know, or
totally
game callers. Extraordinary.
Absolutely fair. I have no idea who this would be, and whatever it is, it could be someone that might, and it might shift it in some way. I don't know, but I don't like the sequencing, Yankees.
How about this guy?
I'll send you my secrets of sequencing PDF if you want, okay? We'll talk.
How about this guy? Fromber.
Oh, no.
Now, we've disagreed on Fromber in the past, I think.
Me and everyone.
But, like, before this year, he'd had seven straight years of an ERA better than 3.6.
Yeah.
With a above average strikeout rate and league leading ground ball rate. So like the story that I'd seen for Fromber was that it's great stuff. He's always going to get ground balls. The strikeout rate and the command go in and out a little bit, and they're probably related to each other. And you'd see him sometimes in the playoffs, lose his command, get all sweaty. Like I remember sweaty Fromber, you know? And yeah, and he would lose his command. So I would say that even though his location plus numbers for his career are bang on for league average, that oscillates. He goes in and out. So my story for this year was he's looking a little bit, you know, out of shape. He's looking a little sweaty. He's looking a little, you know, bad. It's like some of the worst command numbers of his career.
Yeah.
I was thinking it's just command. Now the stuff is down a little bit too. So that makes me unsure of my original analysis. And the ground ball rate is the worst of his career. So I'm just wondering, like, what your read is on, like, let's not say that we have to argue whether or not Fromber is an ace or he should be a top 40 player. Like, but can he just get back to where he was? What do you see that's keeping him from getting back to where he was?
You know, it's so funny. This is really cracking me up a little bit, just because I think we had a conversation about Fromber Valdez this time last year, and I had given him his lowest ranking, I think, of the season. It was after a seven, maybe it was a seven run game, maybe it was a four run game. I don't know. He had a moment in 2025 when it was just like, I can't trust this anymore. I'm just like, I'm done.
Seven run game on August 20th.
It could have been that. It could have been maybe it was that. What I'm getting at here, though, is that Fromber Valdez comes and goes based on his curveball. And Eric Samulski was yelling at us through his car radio, I'm sure, as you asked this. That curveball has just been so bad for most of the year. His first game of the year was great. Two starts ago, it was great. And we've seen in previous seasons, just when he's cruising, the curveball's gone like a 70% strike rate. He's getting all the whiffs out of the zone on it. And when it's not, it's like a 50% strike rate. It's a 55% this year. And that is going to lower the ground ball total. It's just not as competitive of a pitch, and guys are able to hone in more on the sinker. It's that simple. He's never really been an amazing sinker guy as far as like commanding it. It's a harder one. It moves a lot, and it can really catch guys off guard, especially if he's commanding it with.
But if they can keyhole you, they can.
But it's just that's what's happening, and it's been like that all year. Now, it could very well be a classic Fromber story of just, there it is. He's got the curveball. 2 months, bam. He now has a 2 ERA for the rest of the year, right? Like, that is how he's gone in the past. That's why I've always been so anti-Fromber, because it's such a clear cut. Like, you don't know on a given night what you're getting. And I hate that. Even if it ends up as like a 3-4 ERA or something, like a 1.17 whip, I hate the anxiety a pitcher like that gives you. You don't feel confident. You have to constantly make decisions. Is it time to cut? Do I hold? Like, that is your experience throughout the year. And you're not just going to draft them and be like, I don't care, I'm going to close my eyes. If you did that this year, look what you got. You know, like it's been terrible. It's really brought you down. So that's my take on Framber. And it's also the last take you're going to hear on this podcast because Eno has to go. He's got to go see some stupid film or something. I don't know.
I got to run 10 miles and then I ought to see the Odyssey. So.
Oh, you ought to see it. Oh my gosh. Did you just do that? Unbelievable. I am so proud of you.
I apologize.
Are you running to the theater?
No, I just got to get my run in before we go sit down.
I hope you guys enjoyed this one. For me, of all the guys that I think are going to be better in the second half, I'm going to say it's Robbie Ray because I actually think that it's the four-seam will return. I think maybe he will switch to another team, possibly at the deadline.
A new team might be like, hey, dude, your four-seam.
And then
better.
It's like, just we're going to do this. And we're just going to hammer this out. I'm not super in on Bryce Miller at the moment. It is just frustrating. And I'll be honest with you guys, if you're in a 12-teamer and you have some of these and you see someone who's really good on the wire, just make the swap. Just do it. Forget about it. It might not be a good drop, but just do that.
I could see that. I would make the swap on Gore. I would make the swap on Warren. I would make the swap on Ray, but
Valdez and Peralta.
Valdez and Peralta and Miller, I'm trying to keep.
I would say Ray and Peralta you keep and just wait to see where they go. If they go, at the very least. But really, something to think about with the bad drops and all that. Whoever you pick up, you could also drop. It's not like you're making a one-for-one swap and at the end of the year, that's what
you're
it
just
is.
Locked in. Yeah, I mean, some leagues are like that where you just have limited waivers.
But I'm talking 12s. Yeah, if you are in a like, super deep one, everything, you can't afford it.
I generally agree with you because I'm looking at how my DCs have done where you don't get to make waiver wire changes over the course of the year and what my waiver wire leagues are doing. And I'm doing way better in my waiver wire leagues because I've been over time been trying to embrace my inner Pollock and have been a little bit more aggressive.
Oh my gosh.
About you know, and drops and pickups.
First you come to my wedding, then you say Pollock. Oh my gosh, what a year it's been. All right, get out of here. Huge thanks to Eno Sayers for being my wonderful special guest on today's episode. I have a special podcast next week that I'll tell you guys about, and I'll bring Eno back as well. We'll talk about all the trades and everything that the impacts of them, if you guys still care about that. But that's it for today. So we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.